Welcome back to the second half of Earth First Radio. I'm Uncle Dennis, and there's more important information coming up, so please keep that pencil and recycled paper handy. Right now, we're going to get into our commentary as we do every week. This week, our commentary is by Oak. This week, his commentary is...
Waste of water. It's said that the Native Americans were baffled by many of the white man's ways when he set foot here on Turtle Island. One of the most bewildering of such ways was the habit of using rivers as sewers. Only a fool pisses in the stream he drinks from. Today, we treat our sewage with chemicals and technology, but it still goes into the river and the sea. It seems rather odd from a present-day perspective to use water as a medium for moving our waste around. Hasn't it been pointed out that the stuff isn't made anymore here on planet Earth? Given that our dwindling supply of potable water is all we have, that what we see coming out of the tap today is the very same water that came off the Roman aqueducts well over 2,000 years ago, why would we want to waste it? Fools that we are, we still do. Water is fouled in almost every conceivable way, including up in the atmosphere, where there isn't even a place for a human being to sit still. This is not to say that things have not improved. For the most part, here in the U.S., raw sewage and fewer toxic chemicals are dumped directly into the waterways than in times past. However, with 6 billion souls inhabiting the Earth's environs, many of them still fouling the waters, we need to seriously consider that which makes up over 90% of our own bodies. Old habits die hard, but life without water dies easily. I've heard that all the potable water on the planet could fit into a cube 90 miles square. Those are some of the most important miles we shall ever know. Gazing out to sea or lingering by the river to reflect on nature's gifts, it's easy to be lulled into feeling all is well with the world. Perhaps it would be if us humans changed our bewildering ways to being with the wilderness of our ways. At least that's how this Oak sees it for Earth First Radio.
And we thank Oak for his commentary. Oak supplies us commentaries from time to time here on Earth First Radio. Oak is an activist in Western Massachusetts. And let's get back into news here on Earth First Radio. Satellites reveal the loss of the world's forests. In this story by Mark Henderson of the UK Times, mankind has probably destroyed more of the world's forests than previously thought, the first comprehensive satellite survey of forest cover has found. The United Nations Environment Program, UNEP, which prepared the study, said that conservation efforts should now be concentrated on 15 countries, which the new data has shown have more than 80% of the world's deep forest remaining. Just 15 countries account for more than 80% of the 2.87 billion hectares of closed forests in the world. Russia is the most heavily forested country with 669 million hectares. Followed by Canada, Brazil, the United States, the Democratic Republic of Congo, China, Indonesia, Mexico, Peru, Colombia, Bolivia, Venezuela, India, Australia, and Papua New Guinea. It's amazing there are so few countries with old-growth forests left. Protected sites need to be more rigorously policed and local people educated about the value of forests and local biodiversity. Environmentally friendly tourism can help to show the economic value of wildlife, and further financial incentives for conservation could be achieved by tying third world debt relief to forest protection. And this is the story that Uncle Dennis didn't like to get this week. Mining companies invade Peru's Andean cloud forests, and this was from the Environment News Service. The recent discovery of gold deposits in northwestern Peru has split the population between those who support proposed mineral extraction and those who fear it will cause irreparable ecological damage to human health, agriculture, and endangered species. The minerals have been discovered in the agrarian valley of the Tambo Grande District, Piura State, and its surrounding dry tropical forest, part of the lower Piura River Basin. Local residents and conservationists fear the effects of exploration and mining activities by Manhattan Minerals Corporation of Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, and 11 other Peruvian, Canadian, Australian, and Argentinian mining firms. Considerable local protest has been manifested, and violence has broken out between mining supporters and fruit-producing citizens who see their watersheds threatened with deforestation and contamination. In February, the Manhattan Minerals Project facilities near the town of Tambo Grande were vandalized. Calling the perpetrators politically motivated, the company said the actions of the group are not representative of the majority of the town's people, who have strongly supported Manhattan's efforts to bring environmentally sound economic development to the area. The companies have already done mineral exploration in the mountainous nature reserves of Piura, according to a local former mining engineer. In addition to gold and silver, copper and zinc have been found. These companies are waiting for Manhattan to commence Piura's ecological destruction, then they will follow suit, he predicts. The other mining companies poised to exploit northern Peru are Canadian firms Anglo Gold, Newmont, Minera Britannia Gold, and Redmond Ventures Corporation. The Peruvian companies are Buenaventura, Minera Ucala Orumaluc, I can't read that one, Minero Peru, Sur Minera Peruana, and Sidamin, as well as Minera North SA of Australia and Minera Argento of Argentina. These companies have claimed extensive concessions in the northern Peruvian districts of Ayabaca, Sullana, Piura, as well as Tambo Grande. They have already proved the ore samples from their explorations and await the final government decisions under the new Peruvian president, Alejandro Toledo, the nation's first elected indigenous president. Thousands of people in recent months have taken to the streets of Sullana, Piura, and other cities and towns to demand the cancellation of the mining concessions permits, permits that have received support from the now discredited regime of former President Alberto Fujimori. Critics say the proposed mines would dislocate local communities and destroy the region's fruit and carob bean industry and its vegetable fields. Conservationists fear the scale of mining activities would be overwhelming, causing irreparable ecological impact. The first open-pit mine to be allowed in Piura would release large amounts of dust into the strong winds of the area, warned a source who asked not to be identified. The mines would be situated roughly 60 miles inland of South America's Pacific coast, a region which first feels the effects of the cyclical El Niño and La Niña eastern tropical Pacific weather patterns. Scientists working for the preservation of these unique cloud forest ecosystems say water is more precious than anything. Another source, who also asked not to be named, said, "For a short-term profit to obliterate these areas is very unwise. So much of Peru is becoming desertified due to overgrazing and forest destruction. There are only precious tiny remnants left for the mountain tapir and the water and the quality of life." When sources of information for this article asked not to be named, they are likely recalling the March 31st death of agricultural engineer Godofredo Garcia Baca, a campaign for environmental causes who opposed mining proposals in the Piura region. Baca, the former executive director of Special Project for Chira Piura and assessor of the municipality of Chalucana, was shot while driving to his small farm in Samate Bajo, Greater Sullana, local newspapers reported. Driving his truck accompanied by his son Ulysses, Baca was shot in the chest by a hooded boy who ambushed him alongside an irrigation canal. Ulysses told reporters he believes the killing was well-planned and deliberate. A longtime naturalist guide in the area, who asked to remain anonymous, says Baca was murdered. "Myself, I have eluded two attempts on my life. Still, I have not completed my personal investigation of the murder and attempts in order to determine who is or are behind this." He suspects a connection with two of the mining companies, but does not have enough information to charge anyone. "I also know that other regional ecologists have been threatened," he says. "To date, no conservationists other than Baca have been killed." Roughly 600,000 acres or about hectares or about 1.5 million acres of Piura region, about 60 miles inland of the Pacific Ocean, have been claimed by the transnational mining companies. Manhattan Minerals plans to exploit gold-bearing ores in the Valley of San Lorenzo, extracting out of what would be the first open-pit operation in the town of Tambo Grande. Nearly all of this proposed area is a populated agricultural region. The inhabitants of these agrarian lands do not welcome the mining exploration, but business people from Peru's capital city, Lima, see an opportunity to become rich, so they support the foreigners who come bearing mineral wealth. Manhattan has claimed 87,000 hectares in 97 concessions in the area. By comparison, the cultivated region of the Tambo Grande is 50,000 acre hectares. The mining concession includes 27% of the Carabine or Algaraba forest of Piura State, an economically important, healthful, and ecological compatible agricultural product. Carabines become a chocolate substitute in products for the health food market worldwide. Oil exploration is also coming into Piura State hand-in-hand with mining development. Members of the Piura-based NGO Pro Norte Peru are alarmed that near the neighboring town of Sullana, an allocation for petroleum has been given to Argentina Plus Petrol Corporation. This area is inhabited by rare and endangered animals such as tigrillos, jaguars, pumas, mountain lions, crested ducks, and pelicans, nutria, and crocodiles. All are listed as threatened or endangered by the IUCN, the World Conservation Union, and most are also listed by the government of Peru. A critic says that if large-scale mining project in Piura is established, it will not be limited to only one mining company with only three open mines in the district, but will lead to many such open mines over a very large portion of the Piura state. The earth disruption and environmental contamination of water, air, and soil that will result from these open-pit mines, their process stores, their fumes, and their leachates, some of which are cyanide, are inimical to all forms of living creatures and their anciently evolved, intricately interrelated ecosystem, he says. The fragile harmony around the Northwestern Biosphere Reserve will be disrupted, critics predict. The mining company Western Atlas has already penetrated several times within the Biosphere Reserve, disrupting endangered birds and animals. Mineral explorations and claims have penetrated into the very headwaters of the Quiros River in the high cloud forests and paramos that around the frontier garrison town of Ayabaca. All they await is the final government decision respecting the Tambo Grande mine before what conservationists see as the violations of Piura's last nature reserves and the highland source aquifers that will take place. These aquifers absorb, filter, purify, and equitably distribute pure water to all life downslope during all seasons of the year. They constitute a natural value and service whose despoilation we Piurans simply cannot allow, said one man. The magical heights around Ayabaca, and including especially the Cordillera de las Lagunillas, constitute one of a dozen or so sanctuaries for the intriguing mountain tapir, Tapirus pinchaque, a large mammalian herbivore, one scientist said. The tapir acts as a seed disperser in the northern Andes Mountains, where it evolved along with the rise of the montane cloud forest and the paramo ecosystems during the past 3 million years since its forebears migrated to Peru from Central America. The Andean, or mountain tapir, is seriously threatened with extinction due to habitat destruction and hunting. It is classified as fully endangered with extinction by the World Conservation Union Species Survival Commission Tapir Specialist Group. There are estimated to be fewer than 200 of these mountaineering animals surviving in Peru today, with about 2,500 in the northern Andes, including fragmented populations in Ecuador and Colombia. And we want to thank the Environment News Service for that story. We don't take time to read lengthy stories very often here on Earth First Radio, but Uncle Dennis felt that that one was really important. These areas of northern Peru and the Andes are extremely rare, unprotected ecosystems, and this proposed mining and oil exploration is an absolute bummer. Let's move to some more animal news here. New Zealand moves to protect endangered Hector dolphin. New Zealand has imposed a partial fishing ban along about 550 kilometers, that's about 330 miles of its North Island coast, to save one of the world's smallest and most endangered dolphins. The 1.5 meter, about 4 foot long, dumpy North Island Hector's dolphin, distinguished by its rounded dorsal fin, is native to New Zealand and listed as critically endangered with possibly fewer than 100 individuals left. The ban to come into effect this September prohibits commercial and recreational fishing with set nets within 4 nautical miles of the shore. Set nets are fine mesh nets anchored to the seafloor or coast in which dolphins can get entangled as they chase fish. In addition, observers will be put on boats that fish in the area but do not use set nets. There was no realistic alternative to the ban if the species was to be saved, Fisheries Minister Pete Hodgson said in a statement. The population may eventually decline into extinction if the bycatch rate is more than one dolphin in a five-year period. If we are going to save this species from extinction, I see no realistic alternative to a ban on set netting in its habitat waters, Hodgson said. Three North Island Hector's dolphins have already been found dead this year because of set netting, he said. Fishing companies found guilty of breaching the ban in New Zealand will face fines of up to $108,500 at recreational fishers, $4,340. Conservationists have welcomed the ban, but fishing companies, which will not be compensated if they are affected, have said it goes too far. A similar ban exists off New Zealand's South Island region of Canterbury, where the related South Island Hector's dolphin is found, and we want to thank Reuters News Service for that story. And in other news from the United States, a judge has declared the Endangered Species Act listing moratorium to be illegal. The federal government must decide the fate of the New Mexico butterfly within 30 days. On July 31st, a federal judge ruled the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service cannot issue a unilateral moratorium on the listing of new species under the Endangered Species Act. That's right, folks. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has to do their job. Saying that lack of money is no excuse for breaking the law, he ordered the agency to make a decision on the fate of the Sacramento checker spot butterfly within 30 days. That means they have a few more days to do it. The unusually short deadline was a result of the agency admitting that its field office had already drafted the proposed listing rule, but had suspended further work when the agency had adopted a unilateral nationwide moratorium on new listings in November of 2000. Quoting from Congressional Budget Committee, quote, the listing program is not proposed at a level that will allow the service to meet all of the Act's requirements and deadlines. Judge Kelly stated that the agency's financial shortfall was of its own making. The Center for Biological Diversity filed a petition to list the Sacramento checkerspot butterfly, an endemic New Mexico species, as endangered on January 20th of 1999 because of threats from road construction, livestock grazing, invasive plants, climate change, construction of new homes, and pesticide spraying. The Fish and Wildlife Service issued an initial finding that endangered status may be warranted, but has taken no further action to protect the butterfly. And the Fish and Wildlife okays a hunting season for rare trumpeter swans. Fish and Wildlife Service scientists cry foul on agency decision in a new report. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service's recent decision to authorize a hunting season in Utah for the rare trumpeter swan ignores established biology and succumbing to political pressure, according to a white paper written by agency scientists and released by the Public Employees for Environmental Responsibility. In the peer report, entitled Swan Dive, Fish and Wildlife Service employees explain how the agency has been co-opted into authorizing legal harvest of trumpeter swans from the last native nesting population in the lower 48 states. This population, called the tri-state population, with remnants in Montana's Centennial Valley and adjacent parts of Wyoming and Idaho, is also the subject of a pending petition for protection under the Endangered Species Act. Hunting of the more numerous tundra swan has been legal in Utah since 1962. State officials do not want tundra swan hunters to face penalties for shooting trumpeter swans, which bear some resemblance but are significantly bigger than tundra swans. Both Utah and the Fish and Wildlife Service have gone to great lengths to justify a legal hunt. Spending $120,000 to disprove that trumpeters migrate to Utah despite mounting numbers of trumpeter carcasses found in that state. They have reclassified the tri-state population as a mere flock lacking biological significance and tried fruitlessly to develop a survival strategy for the trumpeter that does not rely on migration. As Tom Aldrich, Utah State Waterfowl Coordinator, explained, some hunts take precedent over restoration efforts. The Fish and Wildlife Service has undercut its own mission to boost its relationship with Utah game officials, commented Eric Wingetter, Pure National Field Director, who worked with the agency employees that wrote Swan Dive. Sadly, the service is throwing away decades of its own good work with trumpeter restoration. And we'd like to thank the Public Employees for Environmental Responsibility for this news service. PEER is a national alliance of local, state, and federal resource professionals trying to protect the environment. PEER protects those who protect your environments. Well, we've sort of run out of news today, so what we're going to do is play a little music on toward the end of the show here. Before we do that, I want to say that if you'd like to get news or announcements from your bioregion to Earth First Radio, send us email at cruzief@cruzio.com. That's cruzief@cruzio.com. cruzief@cruzio.com. Or you can send snail mail to Earth First Radio. We're at P.O. Box 344, Santa Cruz, California, 95061. Once again, that's Earth First Radio, P.O. Box 344, Santa Cruz, California, 95061. And be sure to send those announcements at least 3 weeks in advance. If you'd like more in-depth news and information about the Earth First movement, please subscribe to the Earth First Journal. Their address is P.O. Box 3023, Tucson, Arizona, 85702. Once again, the Earth First Journal, P.O. Box 3023, Tucson, Arizona, 85702. It's a really great news source for the Earth First movement. If you'd like to listen to Earth First Radio on your computer, you can do so as we broadcast the show live every Thursday night at 8 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time. Send your browser to www.microradio.net/FRSC. That's www.microradio.net/FRSC. And you'll need a real audio or an MP3 player to tune us in. There's lots of great shows on Free Radio Santa Cruz anytime, so if you want to tune in on the computer, you can do that anywhere, anytime. You can always find Earth First Radio archive shows on the World Wide Web at www.radioforall.net. That's www.radio4all.net. Search for Earth First Radio, and you can download or you can play on real-time Earth First Radio shows. This show is number 154. Earth First Radio is carried on a growing number of free speech and non-commercial radio stations. Please ask your local station to rebroadcast Earth First Radio. Earth First Radio is produced in the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz. Our theme music was written and performed by Daryl Cherney from the CD Keep It Wild. I'm Uncle Dennis, and I want to thank you for listening to Earth First Radio. And now we're going to listen to some spoken word from Jesse Wolf Hardin off his Earth and Spirit CD. And this one's called Gaia Bless.
A poem called Gaia Bless. Gaia bless each of us in our fleeting mortal moment. Bless us for our willingness to feel, for our attempts to make it real. And a special blessing on those sensitive souls among our distracted humankind, those who have seen and rejected the pretense of the modern plastics age, and who through its constant din still hear and record the instructions, the cries, the songs, and the sighs of the sacred earthen mother. O Gaia, bless those that respond to her call, who respond with struggle, even when struggle fails, with healing, even if our healing sometimes proves less than adequate, and with prayer, even as we ache to understand her answers, cast in evolutionary code, in the rustling of den-bound snakes, and the shaking of her winter storms. Gaia bless. Gaia bless the bard's singing of hope to the hopeless. Poets calling forth the gods for the godless. Those artists who paint so that the blind might see. Gaia bless. Gaia bless the old folks who talk to weeds and the kids who ask too many questions. Bless the tribes and the tribeless, the happily married, the seeking, and those who are contented alone. Gaia bless. Gaia bless any two-legged willing to serve the perfection of nature. Those who oppose the mindlessness of bulldozers, and those who instead plant flowers in the bulldozer's tracks. Bless the teachers and the hermits, the first and the last. Gaia bless those bound to constant movement, for all the right reasons, riding atop tornadoes, endlessly migrating across the wide continents of their lives, and those too busy to stop and smell the heath ahead of their inevitable return. And Gaia bless those who instead remain still through the storms of transition, who make promises and find ways to bond their flesh to dirt, who touch her earthen skin just the way she likes it, and tend her willow hair. Gaia bless the folks building their own alternative, earth-hearted homes, and may they be blessed by getting to fully inhabit them, with their mortal hours, with their mortal body, with their immortal soul. Those who care, those who try, those who succeed or fail. Yes, bless those whose every living breath asserts a pledge of love. By our hearts and by our acts, may we be worthy. Gaia bless. Gaia bless.
And well-manicured lawns. Bye-bye Barbie and Ken doll bonds. No more developers or slime ball execs. Your condos are on fire. Coming.